Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Tina Horn, and this is Interrobang. Interrobang is the bonus segment of my Wire People Into That podcast. Follow at Tina Horn Sass or at Tina Horn's Ass, if you're nasty, on Twitter and Instagram. Visit wirepeopleintothat.com. Support my show and get extra shit at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. Maisha, what's up?
Hey, a lot.
Yeah, what is up?
Well, I am here in Brooklyn with you today because we got introduced by Justine McClellan, who's producing the show now. Big props to Justine. And I'm really excited to be here with you because we're doing this kind of tradesy podcast guesting thing. And I'm on my way to Woodhull Sexual Freedom Summit. So there's a lot going on.
Awesome. So the show that you're referring to is Down for Whatever.
That's right.
Which is your sex podcast. I have to say, there's a lot of sex podcasts out there. Yours is among my faves.
Thank you.
Partially because I feel like a lot of sex podcasts just like have sex in the title. And then there's just not that much knowledge or anything really like interesting or new being talked about on the shows, and Down for Whatever interviews. I mean, I always know that that I'm excited about a sex podcast where the people who are being interviewed I'm not already familiar with, but that they sound cool and interesting.
Yeah.
And like credentialed and shit. So mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I love about your show. I'm like, how do I not know this person?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So can you tell, I'm sure that there are Wired People Into That fans who are also Down for Whatever fans.
For sure.
And right now they're like, you know, brains are exploding, at this crossover. there might be, I'm sure of the people who are listening to this show right now who haven't heard of Down for Whatever, I'm sure if they like Wired People Into That, they would like Down for Whatever.
How do you
describe your podcast?
Yeah, I describe it as a sex positive podcast where the interviews are focused on real people and their real experiences with dating, sex, and relationships.
Awesome.
So in creating the show, I wanted to basically provide a platform for the stories of people whose stories don't get told. And that cool. included, you know, along the way, my own story and, mm-hmm. and kind of revealing that through the podcast. But yeah, the very first guest was someone that was referred to me. I was in grad school, so I didn't have a community of folks that were involved in the sexuality community, you know, in that time. So
yeah.
It was basically through referral and my friends that I thought had really interesting takes on love and sex and dating and were doing things differently or doing things that we just don't hear about, even if they're super common.
Yeah.
So that fascinated me. And I was like, you know, I want to provide this platform for those types of stories. That's really important. And they need to be really diverse. I want all kinds of diversity, all kinds of experiences, and that's what I've gotten.
Cool.
So yeah.
What are some of your favorite episodes or people that you've interviewed?
It's hard to pick. One that jumps into mind though is one I'm kind of circling back to all my guests actually like yesterday and today, to try to help promote the show. And so I reached out to one of my earlier guests who's a friend of mine, and his episode is called Dating Tips for Overthinkers. Mm. And it's my friend Michael Levitin, and he, you know, for being a straight white man, what he has to say is really interesting because he is so earnest. And the reason that I brought him on the show is because this man has actually been on This American Life.
Wow, cool.
And he talks about how in his family and how he grew up, like, honesty was everything.
Mm.
And to a point that it was, you know, probably like really emotionally challenging, you know. But having that upbringing and trying to translate that into your dating life, where culturally we're expected to cultivate mystery.
Oh my God, totally.
And, you know, never let on that you're too interested. Mm-hmm. And he was just growing up in that, really fucking confused.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't his family dynamic. And he felt very confident saying, you know, his truth.
Yeah.
And then being met with so many, like just bizarre messages, and to the point where he has had to teach himself how to do what everyone else in the world does in order to have any amount of success in dating.
I relate to that so hard. So hard.
You're very earnest also.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am, and I literally don't like mystery. I mean, I like mystery stories, but I don't, you know, I don't like, I'm not turned on by that. I'm not like, I don't like chase people who are withholding. So I don't like doing it. But it's hard, you know, because it's not necessarily a bad thing that people want that, like, as long as it's reciprocal and ethical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found that episode really fun. He has a show in New York called The Tell.
Oh, cool.
It's a storytelling thing. So I've done an episode for him as well. So cool. Yeah. Another one that I really enjoyed was interviewing a couple that is into puppy and furry play.
Awesome.
And that's also a really popular episode. That is called A Pup Named Romeo.
Cute.
Jeff Rahr and A Pup Named Romeo. And Jeff Rahr is a dinosaur persona.
Oh my
that
God.
My guest Jeffrey has.
Oh my God, dinosaur.
Yeah, dinosaur.
I have to tell you, I think I have heard of that before, but I don't know if I've heard about it that extensively. I also don't know if I've ever met someone who identifies as a dinosaur or who is into dinosaur play, but it makes sense as any extension of any kind of animal play. And it makes sense because people really like dinosaurs.
They do.
What do you think dinosaurs represent or bring out in people? I guess I should listen to the episode.
Well, I think with what my understanding of any sort of, I mean, it's hard to say to overgeneralize, but cosplay, costume play, or dressing up particularly as an animal, I think it really just, to me, ignites that sense of play.
Absolutely.
And I think when you think about how intensely, when you meet a kid and they are so into dinosaurs and they can tell you, like, every species of dinosaur and every, you know, what they eat, what their diet is, where they live, you know, that sort of thing. There's this kind of incredible obsessiveness with something that no longer exists and that you can actually, like, wrap your brain around, like, you can kind of get to the meat of it, and it's I don't know, there's something also playful about that.
You're right. I don't know if I've ever really thought about it this way, but dinosaurs, and we can try to figure out how this is related to sex, but dinosaurs
I was thinking that too. I was like, huh.
But okay, but dinosaurs are an interesting blend of realism and fantasy, right? Totally. Because in a sense, a dinosaur captures the imagination in the way that a dragon or a griffin or a unicorn or a fairy might.
Yep.
In the sense of being you know, an otherworldly creature, but dinosaurs were of our world. Mm-hmm. And you can see sort of like evolutionary echoes of them in reptiles and birds, as we have learned.
That's
first
right.
From Jurassic Park and then science, which caught up to Jurassic Park. And but also the idea that, like, if there were dinosaurs now, would they clash with, like, can dinosaurs and humans coexist?
Right. Yeah. What is it like to approach a T-Rex that, you know, might be really hungry?
Mm, powerful.
And powerful. Or, you know, who is also feeling in a playful mood?
Yeah, maybe. You know? Or velociraptors are so, like, stealthy and they, like, work in packs. I'm, like, really trying to, like, but yeah, so, I, you know, and it's funny because a lot of animal play that I encounter and maybe even participate in is very mammal focused. And I think that that's also really interesting, that I feel like I know more people who identify as or like to play as dogs, cats, ponies.
Yeah, which is why, you know, mostly it's referred to as furry play, right?
That's because right.
That, you know, the plush.
Right. Foxes.
Yes. Yeah.
Bears, obviously.
Really,
yeah.
Popular. But yeah, I think that idea resonates for someone who's an outsider of that community. Just, I mean, it makes sense to me because of the tactile element of it. And from what I know, like, Jeffrey doesn't dress as a dinosaur. He and his partner had someone in their lives who custom built a lot of their costumes.
Cool.
So at this point there may be a dinosaur costume in their lives, but at that point I don't think he had one. But you don't think of dinosaurs as being all that cuddly and caressable.
I have actually really enjoyed the times that I have held alligators.
Yeah, totally.
I find them really fun to hold and stroke.
Okay, so what's next on your list?
I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Well, that's cool. I love that we like sort of stumbled backwards into why are people into dinosaurs.
Totes.
So awesome. Well, I can't wait to hear what my listeners think of your podcast. And in addition to having a podcast, you also have a thriving sex coaching career.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a certified sex coach. And I studied through, well, first I have my master's in psychology, which I got from the New School here in New York. Shout out to the New School for Social Research.
Totally.
And after completing that, I was like, okay, what's next? I could go on and become a therapist and then go through the ASECT training to become a sex therapist. But that was like a lot more money and many more years. And
yeah.
I was just like, God damn it. I want to get into the room with people and talk about their sex lives and help them because that's what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
So I had a call with Dr. Patty Britton, who's the mother of sex coaching and
cool.
founded Sex Coach U. And she was like, you know, no pressure, but this could be what you need, you know, based on what you've already done and where I can see you want to go. Sex coaching gives you the framework to work as an independent, you know, business owner, as a coach. And it also gives you the sexological training that you need. So understanding,
cool.
yeah, anatomy, going through a SAR, which is a sexual attitudes restructuring.
Oh, cool.
Very, very cool. You watch porn in a room with people.
Cool.
Talk about your feelings. And just like a very thorough background in what the common concerns are that a person would have who seeks out a sex coach. Yeah. So you get all of that with the training and then you become certified like myself.
Fantastic. Sort of related to what I was saying about your podcast, I feel like I see a lot of people out there going by the my least favorite portmanteau in the history of portmanteaus, which is Sexpert. Mm. And a lot of people doing coaching who don't necessarily have any credentials,
yes,
or qualifications, or maybe even experience. And while I want us to remain critical of institutionalized gatekeeping around knowledge, especially around mental health, especially around sexuality, sometimes it's a little frustrating to me to see people out there calling themselves sexperts, even just in the sense that I'm like less concerned that they are, I mean, I'm concerned that they're spreading disinformation, but also there's like so many different perspectives and things to talk about with sexuality, and a lot of the institutionalized knowledge is wrong, even today, and also like recently in history, very, very backwards. But I guess I'm like more on a personal level, like frustrated that like the like field is like being diluted, or like what it means to maybe like have a lot of experience and expertise in giving people sex advice or being a coach or making media around sexuality, that it is like getting diluted by all of these people who are just like, and now I'm a sexpert.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that you have really devoted yourself to doing all of that training. And it seems like people are really responding to it.
Yeah. I recommend sex coaching for everyone. You don't have to be in a crisis to seek out a sex coach. And I work with people around dating as well. So it's something that feels very natural to me, and the coaching framework is something that gets a lot of hate from, you know, from folks that were in my psychology program, for instance, that see the only true way to affect change on an individual level as going on to get, you know, a clinical degree,
right,
a PhD or a PsyD or MSW. And, you know, I've explored all of those things, and they weren't right for me personally, for where I was in my life. But I think the mixture of having the master's in psychology, understanding, for instance, developmental psychology, and the New School is great about having preaching against pathologizing.
Cool.
So it went very well with this idea of sex coaching, which is non-pathologizing. You'll never hear me say I have a client who's a sex addict or a porn addict.
Awesome.
That's not how I approach it. I definitely love for my clients to identify themselves to me, but I do try to work against some of the verbiage that gets commonly thrown around that makes people feel like shit for having certain kinds of behavior patterns or preferences.
And not in a way that actually helps them to
exactly
like achieve whatever they want to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. Every single person is coming with a specific goal, whether it's, you know, to explore things that they have had a lot of fear and anxiety around exploring. Those are fun clients. or they're really in a state of crisis, like, you know, folks that are in relationships that don't involve the kind of sex that they want or need, or they're not getting enough of the sex that they want or need. And that is a relationship crisis. And it's not easy to get out of that hard place. But it's work that I find really, really rewarding. And I just want to do it until the day I die.
Fantastic. So if people are interested in learning more about your practice, where should they go?
They should go to maishabattle.com.
Will you spell that?
It's M as in Mary, Y-I-S-H-A, battle, B-A-T-T-L-E. www.sexanddatingcoaching.com. And that has my information about sex and dating coaching. It has links to my podcast, to my writing, and any appearances and workshops that I'm doing as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So since I have you here today, and I wanted to ask you, just because you mentioned it off mic, that you might be thinking about writing a book as well?
Yes, that is correct.
Do you want to give us a little teaser for...
The teaser and what I've sort of been rolling with as the concept, so if there are any literary agents listening, hit me up, is basically the KonMari of sex. So...
Oh.
Looking...
Like the life-changing magic of tidying up your sex life?
Right. Yes. And really, it's all about, the concept is all about the self-knowledge that it takes to even apply the ethics of, you know, all of the things that you and I talk very, you know, we talked at length about with each other, about there are points in every single relationship where you can... assert what you need, and yeah, there's space for negotiation of getting what you want without being a fucking asshole. And so the book would be like a way for people to explore it through, you know, exercises and things that would be in the book. What are their true core values? What are their true needs sexually? And how to convey those to a partner in a way that respects the fact that they're another person as well, and that they have needs and that they have wants, and to try to encourage that sort of, you know, the little drip drop that turns into a river that can flow out into the ocean of hopefully more satisfied and responsible adults doing whatever and whomever the fuck they want. You know, like, can we just all have that without you know, coercion and deceit and cheating and lying and all of the things that come with engaging with people on a regular basis. But I think we're ready for that. Like, we talk about mindfulness in day-to-day lives. We need to be more mindful in our sex lives.
Totally. Oh, yes. Okay, well, I'm ready to read the book. So somebody out there listening should publish it.
Thank you. I would love that.
In the meantime, since I have you here,
yes,
I would love for us to play a little rapid fire version of Why Are People Into That, since it seems like you have a wide knowledge and also maybe like a pedagogy or approach to different elements of sexuality that it might be new and refreshing.
Hell so, yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. So I'm gonna start with one that I think, from what I have read by you and about you, might be in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
And this is one that I have done an episode about before with Ignacio Rivero several years ago. And my question for you is, why are people into squirting?
Oh, yeah. I knew you were going to ask. People... I mean, is it the recipient or the person who... Okay.
Both, okay. Either.
So I'd like to address this as a squirter. I am into squirting because it is a different sexual sensation from anything else that I can experience. So it's not required. It's not expected. But when it happens, it is a sensation that is full body. It's deeply relaxing to be with a partner who appreciates the squirt. It builds intimacy and connection. You know, I've had people like drinking the fluids, yes, and there's nothing more sexy to me than that. And I mean, this goes back into like, and I guess I could speak to the history of squirting, where, you know, there are like ancient Indian text where this is like spirit water, basically. Yes. Oh, like to drink to drink the fluids from a woman as she is coming is like that. That's your mission. You know, that's your goal. And that that fuels you. So there's like this kind of deeper connection that I've found. But also with partners, I think there's like, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of solid markers of a female orgasm. So much so that, you know, there's people who do fake or whatever.
Right.
For whatever reason. And, you know, if you like to fake, cool, you know.
Agreed.
But I think it's this an equalizer for the male body and the female body. And men aren't, my partners are primarily men. Men aren't used to that.
Mm.
And it seems very satisfying to them.
Yeah, because you're like taking up space and you're being uninhibited and
Yeah. No, I think it's great. And it's also for me personally.
Yeah.
I'm into it because I know that when I squirt and I squirt a lot, it's because my pelvic floor is really strong.
Yes.
And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, it's like weightlifting.
Yeah.
It's like when you like achieve like a fitness goal and you're like, "Hell yeah, I'm super strong."
Exactly. I'm like, "Go body," you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
Well, agreed. Okay, fantastic. That checks out. Next up is, why are people into dirty talk?
Ooh. Well, people are into dirty talk for a lot of reasons. I would say that for me, dirty talk is appealing because I'm a verbal person. Mm. And I have probably been more turned on by what someone has said to me or written to me than maybe anything they could do to me.
Cool.
And that is because, I don't know, I like, we're, you know, the even if it doesn't play out the way that it does, I think that the saying, like, word is bond, like,
yeah,
it's like you're saying something to me that you want or that you expect or that you desire, and that takes a lot of guts. And even if it doesn't happen, like I said, the fact that you verbalized it, you got it out of brain, it went through critical thinking, it, you know, it got mushed around and then it came out as like, I want to eat your pussy till you come. Awesome. Like that's great. Like that takes a lot. And also people are into it because it's on some level safer.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, you could consider dirty talk a safer sex practice.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, I mean, fucking is fucking is fucking. And if you're telling someone all the things you want to do to them, and that includes whatever kind of sex you're into, yeah, you can say you'd fuck them.
Yeah, you can't get knocked up by a sex.
That's right. You can't get an STI.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so then there's the other part of language that I really appreciate. And that's tone and delivery.
Oh, shit.
And that is another, that's like another way to be turned on, because playing with that and using that, taking up that auditory space with someone with the intention of sexual arousal is super, super hot.
Yeah, and now that you're saying that, you know, I don't know if I had even have, you know, I do so much work around dirty talk, and I really appreciate that you brought up tone, essentially, because it makes me think of, you know, like performance and acting or making music or anything like that, like art that you make with your body. And in a way, working with tone and being aware of the effect that tone has with someone is kind of a way about being really grounded in the moment. Mm-hmm. I know it's kind of cheesy, but, like in acting, you know, acting is reacting, and you, I think everybody knows, I mean, even just now when you like dropped your voice a few octaves, you know, I think that you can imagine that when somebody talks to you that way, they're like zeroing in on you,
right?
And the rest of the world is melting away, and it's seductive, and it's about attention, and that is really appealing and an amazing thing that language can do.
Yeah, I agree. And it also creates, like I said, this space, like you mentioned, it hones in on what the intention of the moment is. And so much so that if I delivered a different kind of line in that voice, it wouldn't really make sense.
Right.
Like when I use that voice, the intention behind that voice is sensual, is to try to coax something out of someone else. I'm not going to necessarily use that language to ask, did you get your laundry from the laundromat yet? Did you get it? I mean, although it could still be hot.
You can. I mean, especially if you're like in service to somebody, then,
right?
You know, or
yes.
You're like giving someone an order or humiliating them,
right?
Or
right.
Anything like that. But your point still stands. part of why that is so, part of why it is so sexy that chores can be sexy when they are sexy is because of the contrast of the like mundanity of something that is. Not at face value,
right.
Erotic, and transforming it into something erotic.
Mm-hmm. And cool. You can do that through tone.
Awesome. Okay, next up.
Okay.
Why are people into threesomes?
People are into threesomes because it, I mean, unless threesomes is your primary sex, I guess, configuration or... it is a way to introduce another element, a whole lot of other elements, rather, by adding another person.
Totally.
And they're into it for lots of different reasons. Some might be into threesomes for the experience of pleasure that they cannot get with a single body.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there are just logistically things you can do with two additional people that you can't do with one additional person.
Like having somebody sit on your face while you're getting fucked.
Exactly.
Just
for instance.
Hypothetically.
Yes. But then there's also this element of experiencing pleasure with those two people. And, you know, for some, you have a primary partner who you're bringing in a third. And in that case, it's seeing that person in a different sexual context.
Yeah.
And appreciating what that is for them, that pleasure of someone else, with someone else, from someone else.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then sometimes people are into threesomes because it gives them material for later.
Yes.
So lots of different reasons to like a threesome.
Agreed.
This ship is lonely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Lovers are cold on the phone. The mood out in the hall ain't fantastic. Air feels static, not dramatic.
When we were talking earlier, you were talking about a particular porn movie that had a big effect on you that involved two women in a hot tub.
Yes.
And you mentioned that you have gravitated towards slippery porn ever since. So that made me think, That made me want to ask you, why are people into splashing? Now, do you know what splashing is?
I know what splashing is.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious what, if you feel like, you know, splashing is sometimes called wet and messy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like food play. So sometimes it's about the food, but sometimes it's about the messiness. So like, I think that potentially like lube wrestling or mud wrestling could be maybe like under the umbrella of wet and messy, even yes. if it's not edible.
Yeah. And so for me personally, I'll just clarify that like, I'm all about some like massage room porn, and I'm all about Nuru, that crazy. Do you know what
this is? I don't know what Nuru is. Yes. Okay. So far you told me about dinosaurs and what is
it? I've never tried it, but it is this substance like a lube, but it is very viscous.
Oh.
It's clear, and you can put usually the scenes that I've seen. There's like a plastic inflatable like floaty thing
yeah.
that's put down on the floor.
Yeah.
And so then one person is on it kind of covered in this Nuru substance and then another person like slides on them. And like, you know, like sliding up and down in different areas with different parts of their body. And
sounds great.
It does. And the thing is that you need the space and you need to be able to like right. clean up after that.
Yeah.
And I just haven't had an opportunity to indulge. But so those are two very, you know, particular things. It's like the massage, the tactile, and that for splashing, I think it's similar.
Yeah.
Where there's this sensation that's new, and with splashing, maybe it's more particular. I saw this one, photo book that was just asses in wedding cakes. It was photos of Whoa. Asses going into wedding cakes and Whoa. Super specific, but like if that's your thing, I think like you kind of probably gravitate towards a type of sensation,
right?
Where cake is really popular, or like bowls of spaghetti or something that you are like, oh, this is a thing. And I think it's the same with Nuru, where I love getting massages in
yeah.
general.
Yeah,
and I love like being lubed up and all that when I'm being massaged. So taking that into a sexual level for me, I'm like, it's a familiar sensation. I really like it.
Yeah.
And I can associate, I can like push it a little bit farther into this realm of like, this would be great, you know. I know what I would feel and it would be great, you know.
I have so many questions about Nuru.
Yeah.
So is it what is it made of?
I have no idea.
So do you think that it's like body safe? Like is it
Google
like
it.
Is it genital safe is my main question.
I've definitely seen it go in genitals.
Yeah.
I would imagine it would probably be some kind of silicone base, but I'm looking it
yeah,
up right now.
I want to know. The like sex geek in me is like,
I haven't
is
seen
this a toxic material,
right? I haven't seen anybody use it with a toy, so I don't know, like, you know how you can't really use silicone with a silicone toy,
right?
Or whatever.
Right. Yeah,
I haven't really seen that. I don't know if this is going to come up.
But can you, like, buy, like, a gallon of it on the internet?
You know, I haven't delved into it this deeply. And Googling Nuru sex doesn't turn anything. I mean, it turns up videos. But let me see if it's, like, lube.
What does it stand for?
Nothing. It's the word.
Yeah.
Like, if you Google Nuru massage gels. Oh. Okay, and then okay. So there's okay, so there's Nuru Gel Premium, then Nuru Sheets and a mattress protector.
Nice.
Okay, Wet Nuru Concentrated, you can get at Walmart.
Oh.
What in the absolute fuck? I mean, okay. So bear with me, it's loading. I'm sorry. This is like a gallon container.
Oh, I think I'm getting interference with
yeah,
the phone.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay, if I can. Okay, body on body massage gel. Can you even? I just want you to verify that this is on the Walmart website.
Wow, and it's like a yeah. Wow. Oh, it's made. It's that's the Wet and Wild logo.
Okay.
So it is at least made by one lube company. So this is not just
water,
like
the... water-based.
Oh, so it's water-based. Is there sugar in it? Glycerin in
probably.
It?
Probably.
If there's glycerin in it, you should not put it in your cunt.
No gine action.
Well, this is really fascinating. So I guess
a little something about me.
Thank you. I mean, this is why having people who are actual experts on the show is so nice, because I'm sure I've seen it in porn, and I guess I probably assumed that it was lube. And I'm wondering also, like, what is different about it from lube? And if it's water-based, then it's not oil.
It's so weird. Like, a lot of the videos that I've seen, they will be very, like, generous with it, you know? And there's so much of it.
Yeah.
And, like, even just, like, collecting it off someone's body and, like, letting it drip down back onto them. It's yeah. That viscous.
Yeah, yeah. That does sound interesting and unique.
I'm so into it.
You've never actually bought it and played with it?
No.
I mean, that is one thing that porn can do, is if you have a production budget, or even just a focus on creating a production, then you can either create a space in your home or have a space in a studio where you can get wet and messy and also have a place that you can clean up.
Right.
But it seems like if you're so into it, you should probably try it. Like, I don't know, maybe in like the presidential suite of a hotel in Washington, D.C.
Maybe. Got to see if there's a Walmart nearby.
I'm sure that you could Amazon Prime that shit. Sorry, we're perhaps not supported by Walmart or Amazon.
No.
I'm sure, I find it interesting that it's not something that I see at like your regular sex positive sex toy store.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that leads me to suspect that it might not be that body safe. But I'm gonna ask my friends at the Pleasure Chest what the deal is with Nuru.
Yeah. Okay. So this is another. This is Consumer Health Digest. Nuru gel only contains four different ingredients. These ingredients include thistle, milk thistle.
Hmm.
The plant extract contains vitamin E. Fumaric acid, lutein, tryptophan, acetate, and various other substances that provide health benefits in the human body. So I don't know.
The health benefits getting you off.
Yeah. Of which there are plenty.
We are doing some investigative reporting
deep
here,
dive,
folks, and I hope that you are as entertained by it as I am. Well, thank you for introducing me to this new concept, and also it is nice to hear you talk about it as something that like brings you so much pleasure to voyeur to.
Oh yeah.
And it is also interesting to think about the voyeurism of porn when there is something that is so extremely about creating a unique sensation. I mean, mm-hmm. Technically, sex is about creating, all kinds of sex are about creating unique sensations. But when there is something that is like so visceral about the material that is being used,
yeah,
and like the action that is created by that material, it kind of reminds you of what the benefits of porn are, that you get to enjoy watching, voyeuring, witnessing something, and then, you know, like somebody else cleans it up for you.
Yeah.
Also, see, it does thing. Sound like playing around in a giant puddle of cum. I mean,
let's
sorry
honest.
To bury the lead there, no, but it sounds like a substance that is like synthetic cum.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it in a different way right now, where I'm thinking about the fact that I have always loved shower sex and like hot tub sex and pool sex and this slipperiness. And I think it just is like a way to facilitate that that is not as chafing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you have any as a purveyor of water sex, do you have any tips for because it speaking of things that look better, that are like more fun to watch than they are to do, I love shower sex and I love hot tubs, and you know, every sex worker at some point has to try to recreate the dolphin sex scene from
I did not see that coming,
from Showgirls. You don't think, listen, when I think of sex in water, the first thing I think of is Kyle MacLachlan and Elizabeth Berkley in Showgirls.
Okay, word. Yeah. Yeah.
But so how do you keep it from chafing?
Just lube. Lots of lube.
Yeah.
Prepping. Having more activity happen outside prior to trying to penetrate inside the water.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's hard. And plus, like, once you get going, you're losing some of that lubrication.
Right.
So,
right.
Quickie, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Just make it quick. just make it quick. And hopefully it won't be as chafing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. I want to do maybe like one or two more. Do you want to pick from my list?
Sure.
Choices.
I like this element of surprise, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, then I'll just keep going and I'll keep picking. Okay. So, why are people into sex shops?
Ooh. Yeah.
Now, I just want to clarify that when we talk about people being into something, how do I want to say this? Like, there's getting a thrill, like a sexual thrill from going to a sex shop. And then there's also just like the, like being into them and liking them and liking to shop there, whether it's actually like a strictly like erotic experience or not. And what I'm not necessarily talking about is like going into a sex shop and like with the intention of like getting really turned on. You know, obviously I do not endorse getting really turned on in a sex shop and like trying to involve the people who are working there or the other customers in your, like trying to involve them unconsensually in your fantasy of the excitement of being there. You know, back in the day, sex shops used to have booths and places to cruise. That's like maybe its own thing, but, you know, setting aside, let's assume that we're not talking about, unconsensual, exploitative, behavior in a sex shop, but what are some of the ways that people could be into sex shops without taking advantage of anybody else?
Yeah, I am one of those people who is into sex shops and have a long history with sex shops prior to even the ones that are women friendly today that we know and love. I can speak to why I was into those male dominated spaces and being there and definitely feeling like everyone there was doing something in secret and how I enjoyed that aspect of it as well. There was a place in Oakland that I went to with one of my partners, and they did have the booths in the back. I did
some cool
research, and so I've had sex in a porn shop.
That's fun.
Before.
Sleazy.
It was sleazy, and sometimes the girl goes sleazy. I'm just saying.
Sometimes
the girl.
I've read about it in books. Goes, yeah.
Goes a little sleazy.
Well, what is hot about sleaze? Because in some ways, like, you know, sleaze, I think, is like a pejorative word.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, there are lots of reasons to avoid sleaze if what sleaze means is like again, like some, you know, something that is like unclean or some, again, I guess like in some ways you can associate sleaze with like people who are out to try to like take advantage of you, yeah, or like make you uncomfortable.
Right.
So then what is there to sort of like reclaim and enjoy about things that are seedy or sleazy?
Yeah. That's a good sub question to this. And I think for me, again, I can only speak from my experience that my community has been rich with sleaze. I mean, since I was a kid, I grew up in the rural South and, you know, people aren't doing things on the up and up,
right,
all the time. And there's this element of, you know, you kind of do what you got to do to get what you want done. Mm. And sometimes that's going into a back alley to do something.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I you talked about, you know, getting somebody older than you to buy you booze and porn,
yeah,
in our conversation. And I was the girl who would go into the wine store where I knew older guys and flirt with them and have them give me, you know, handles of booze and things like that. It's sleazy. It's sleazy.
It's a sleazy thing to do.
Life, but I love it.
Well, you know, but also, but sleaze life.
Sleaze life forever. Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about that simple scenario that you were just describing is that probably most people would assume that the person, you know, we don't endorse buying things for minors that they cannot buy for themselves. However, we did do that as minors.
Yes.
So we're just speaking from our own experience.
That's right.
I think that most people would probably say that someone who buys alcohol for a minor is themselves being sleazy.
Right.
But because there, it does seem like there's a power dynamic at work in sleaze. So maybe part of what is fun to be a woman or to be somebody who has been like marginalized by the power dynamic that produces sleaze or it continues to be in real danger from the potential violence or discomfort or aggression of sleaze. So to sort of top from the bottom a little bit, mm-hmm, and to be like, well, I'm gonna like be sleazy so that you can't say that it was your idea.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the nature of the shops that I would go to later on in life, where I was like, you know, I know the story here. I know everybody's embarrassed and you're not going to look me in the eye and, you know, there's going to be some eyes darting in my direction, and I was usually the only female,
yeah,
patron. I was like, I had a membership to one store because they had, you know, videos that you could rent, and like showing my membership card. There was a power in being in this space that was predominantly for men who had this like, you know, yeah, they were all kind of shameful, and I could be powerful.
I love that. Wait, was this where you grew up in the rural South? No, that you had the membership? No,
this was in Oakland. Yeah.
You know, was it on 56th and Telegraph?
It was on 56th. I mean, it was on Telegraph, but
there was just one. I almost lived above a sleazy porn shop on, I think it was 56th and Telegraph.
Yeah, if you're heading into Berkeley from Oakland, it was on the right hand side of the street.
Yeah,
and it was kind of near where the
the Ethiopian restaurants.
Yeah, maybe, but more so, I remember it being part of like the what is now like Little Koreatown that is in Oakland now.
Oh, maybe
it has its own neighborhood name now that is hip and chic. I think it's like NoCo.
Oh God.
Uh huh. But yeah, it was in that area. I want to say closer to the 40s because I lived at 31st and Telegraph.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I would definitely be able to to jog up there and get my viewing material.
I love that. And you know, it's interesting hearing you describe like striding into a space that is supposed to be reserved for men, or that is supposedly designed for men, where most of the people in there are men, and being comfortable and confident and saying, I deserve to be here too, or I just like, I want to be here and I can, and getting your own thrill out of that. That's definitely something that I can relate to. It really doesn't feel that different from walking into a comic book store or a record store. Like, obviously, women belong in comic book stores, women belong in record stores. But right. Even today, it's just more common for men to be confident consumers in those specialty places. So to walk in as a woman and make everybody else uncomfortable,
yeah,
is definitely something that is a pastime that I enjoy.
Yeah.
It sounds like we have that in common.
Yeah, and I think that for lots of very good reasons, the female friendly sex shop opened up to counteract that barrier that a lot of women felt,
yeah,
in accessing those things, right? But yeah, there's still a good handful of sex shops that have that more seedy element around. But I just it really depends on what kind of experience you're looking for. And I guess I haven't been into a seedy sex shop in a long time, mostly because of now that I'm an educated consumer,
right?
I want to spend my dollar on things that are body safe, and a
absolutely
lot of the things in that are being carried in the CDs. I mean, hey, if you own a CD sex shop that is like only carrying pleasure products that are body safe and you know, worth my investment, get at me. But until then, I'm gonna go with the other spots.
So even if you're going into a place that, okay, so like my last question about sleaze is I think that maybe there are some folks who feel like the sex positive, women friendly, feminist, indie sex toy shops are lacking in that sleaze, and I think that, yeah, there is something to the authentic sleaze. It's kind of like hate fucking, right?
Right.
Like if you're going into a place that like is really sleazy, and when you do see like toxic toys, it is a little bit like, oh yeah, this is the real shit. Like people really do not care about yeah. my vaginal health here. Like this, you know, this is like, you know, I'm not role playing. This is really bad. But I do think that a lot of the thrill of going into a place like that is stuff that you can definitely get from a place that is, like, that does care about yeah. those things, and does care about like about being queer friendly, about being right. anti-racist, about education, mm-hmm. about community, and that one of the big thrills is just that we're not supposed to talk about sex. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that maybe you and I can forget sometimes because it's our jobs to talk about sex, but
right.
I'm sure you encounter with your clients how difficult it is to even just, you know, have that conversation, or have that conversation in public, to admit to being a sexual being in public. So when you walk into a sex toy store, whatever you're shopping for, you're admitting that you're curious.
Right.
And that can be thrilling.
Yes, I agree with that. And the first, so that CD, those CD places, I just rented porn and fucked in them, I guess. thank you very much. But the first vibrator I ever bought was from Good Vibrations.
Cool.
And I think that is in my mind, like, it does show where my comfort level was. with engaging with product. Like porn, for some reason, you grab a sleeve, you tell the guy, you know, they pull the DVD.
Just renting a video.
But with being hands-on with a product and trying to decide what was right for me, I definitely feel like those spaces provided me with a comfort level where I could reach, I could grab, I could, you know, look, I could turn things on. And, you know, yes, your heart is racing because you're just like, I don't know, you know, for the first time ever touching a vibrator, like, you don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, having that experience within a safe environment felt really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes being into something sexually is about the thrill that it gives, but also sometimes being into something sexually is about the way that it's affirming and makes you feel comfortable or safer or encouraged to explore.
Yeah. And the difference is a little bit of that, you know, the dirt and the seed doesn't invite touch.
Whereas
the clean, well-lit place, which is Good Vibrations tagline, that does invite exploration and curiosity and touch and experimentation. And that is thrilling.
Totally.
Yeah.
Maisha, I have learned a lot from you today. Yes. I'm excited about that. It reminds me of when Merritt Kay was on the show when we talked about cocksucking. And at one point she was like, she brought up this sort of internet fan fiction thing called the Omegaverse, and I didn't know what she was talking about, and she was like, yes, like a stump Tina Horn. And it's true, it's nice that there's something new under the sun. Nuru.
N-U-R-U.
Okay, I'm gonna investigate. I'm gonna tweet about
have
it
fun.
Actually and be
have
like
fun.
Yeah. Apparently. So if people want to find out more about your work, they can check out maishabattle.com.
That's right.
They should subscribe and download to Down For Whatever.
Yes, please.
And you are on Twitter and Instagram?
Yes, I am at Maisha Battle.
Cool. Anything else you want to direct people to?
No, not right now. Thank you so much for having me, Tina. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been really fun. And yeah, I'm gonna look up dinosaurs and Nuru, and I guess you could combine those things. Anyway, okay, now I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah. Think about it.
That's good.
Okay.
The things I'm dreaming of from my station. A vacation. Locations
In Tarabang is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme music is by my brother from another mother, Moot. Thanks for listening.
Rounding the planet, windows fill with light. My love has some fun every night.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.